Welcome to Global Minnesota Podcasts, connecting, informing, and engaging Minnesotans with the world and exploring important international issues. For a complete list of programs and to join us, visit globalminnesota.org.
Thank you so much to Mark Ritchie. This is the first time that Fresh Energy has been able to work with Global Minnesota, and kudos to everyone in this staff and organization for your level of professionalism, and especially grateful that you were able to hire Mark Ritchie as your president. Thank you. Thank you for coming here in the polar vortex night. I'm a climatologist by training. So if you want to know why this is happening and how it's related to global warming, ask me during the Q&A. But I want to talk about action on global warming tonight. And I'm going to start with three precepts. One is Minnesota never likes to settle for being average or second best. So we love it that we're colder than Chicago and colder this morning at my house in St. Paul than the South Pole of Antarctica. This evening is about Minnesota showing the world the way forward at the Conference of the Party in Poland, showing the world what we are. And one of the precepts of this talk, from my point of view, is that we need lots of victories in climate change, and we need them quite quickly, and we need deep decarbonization. And I think the best way that we can cement success, make sure that we are successful as a globe, the best way to cement success is to showcase success. So that is part of our frame going forward. My name, by the way, is a little difficult. Some of the other speakers' names I'm going to have a little difficulty pronouncing too, and they will help me. I will help you with mine. People really call me Jay. It's my nickname, so please feel free to call me that. I work for this wonderful nonprofit based in St. Paul called Fresh Energy. We're now 27 years old. Our mission is to speed and accelerate the transition to clean energy so that it benefits all. We're very serious about it. We're a market-driven organization, and we are policy wonks. I'm probably the least wonky of the people, and that's why I'm here in front of you today. But we engage in detailed analysis and research. People refer to us often, and we like to be called upon by the legislature, by members of Congress, as climate and energy policy experts. You'll see on the upper left there, the bedrock of everything we do is to make everything energy efficient. We'll assume that bedrock tonight. We're going to build on that by building out more renewable energy. And I'm a climatologist by training, so I would never have started my work 26 years ago during a month that was colder than this. We had minus 33 degrees Fahrenheit, my first board meeting at Fresh Energy, so colder than this week. But I wouldn't have started with this company unless I knew that they were science-based and data-driven, that they were advancing policies that actually made sense and penciled out and grew markets for wind and solar energy and brought to Minnesota clean water, clean air, and much better control of our carbon emissions. And at the same time, do what every utility in the state would get in front of you here tonight and say, is really important, affordable, reliable energy. So we're about that too. Here are some of the programs at Fresh Energy. Our newest one we're most excited about is equity, so making sure that the people who are renters and in lower resource communities also benefit from the clean energy transition I'll be talking about today. But we have quite a variety of work. Everyone on staff is focused on the idea that people are now being harmed by global warming and climate change. But the parallel idea that we know not everything we need to do to control this, but we know 80 or 85% of what we need to do, and we need to get busy. As some commentators have said, if you're really serious about addressing climate change, you're after who has the leverage to get you the deepest carbon cuts fastest, more carbon cut faster. So that is what we are laser focused on. This is the picture for the entire U.S. This is actually an accurate set of data that came off the Trump administration's website. I'm not sure if it's still there, but it was there when I accessed it a couple of months ago. And just to give you a sense, I'm going to be talking a lot about electricity this evening because it's the number one source of global warming emissions. Remember, deeper, more carbon, faster. You have to focus on that first. But I'll also be talking about what until now has been the secondary sector in the U.S. and Minnesota transportation, but is now rising up the chain. So if you're looking for big changes in carbon, you have to look at carbon policy. This is not about what you can do in your home tonight to fight global warming. This is about who controls the big levers of change. So what Fresh Energy often tells people is, we exist, we were formed as a nonprofit to help ordinary, regular Minnesotans who care deeply about the globe and international communities and relations to identify your highest lever for change and help you pull it with all your strength. So I'll give you some examples of that tonight. For instance, we were in conversations with folks at Metro Transit for almost a year talking about their diesel bus system. See that? That's under other transportation in the graph. And so we were delighted a couple of months ago when Metro Transit announced they had rescinded an RFP for new diesel buses in order to form a plan to electrify their entire bus system. They're going to be starting in a few months, I believe, with Volkswagen settlement money. Everyone kind of knows what that means. That's interesting. That's been getting interesting publicity. The first use of those funds in Minnesota will be to purchase electric buses and replace dirty diesel buses that now run through North Minneapolis. Isn't that the right thing to do? So I want to make sure you know that. I hope I'm going to be telling you things tonight that you don't know, but that will make you proud to be Minnesotan. And this is something I got from Mark Ritchie. And what I say to people all the time, if I tell you something you don't know that you're proud of, know that if it had happened in California, the whole world would know it. But we need to do more talking about what we're doing right, and we need to insist that more people do that. So back in 2007, 12 years ago now, the Minnesota legislature sent a bipartisan bill to Republican Governor Tim Pawlenty, and here's what it did. Science-based goals at the bottom for greenhouse gas reductions across the entire economy in 2007, and a renewable energy standard that applied across the board to everyone who sells electricity in the state. I'm showing you this because now we have 12 years of track record. And remember, I work for an organization that likes to document and pay attention to data and show that policy matters if it does. So here's how policy matters. First of all, we got a big leg up from the market. Thank you, Japan, China, Germany, who helped reduce the price of solar energy that's on the right there by 89% in the last 9 years. Meanwhile, the price of wind went down 67% in the same 9-year period. So the market was improving. So companies, including utilities, were taking advantage of that. And here is a slide that we created just to show you how policy, that policy I showed you before from 2007, the Next Generation Energy Act, can make a difference in less than half a human generation. The policy passed in 2007. So just before that, 2006, and then the snapshot on the right is 2017. For electricity supply in Minnesota, went from almost 2/3 coal to now less than 40% coal in Minnesota in less than 12 years. That is diversification. What picked up the slack, remember the lights have to stay on affordably, that green wedge is renewable energy, primarily wind in this case, but also some solar, went from 7% to 25%. Light stayed on. Some smart people, and I often speak in college classes around the state, sometimes a college student will say, but Jay, what happened to the size of the pie? Very astute question. The size of the pie stayed the same because we were doing our best with conservation and efficiency. So I'm going to step you through some more of these benefits. First of all, we have to make sure that prices didn't get out of line for electricity. Here in yellow is the average electricity bill in 2017 for a Minnesotan, much less than the national average, which is fourth from the right, much less than our competitors in close by states, so that's a good thing. These kinds of changes, the implementation of this policy, got the attention of the White House. So I got invited just before the Paris talks, the Paris Climate Summit in 2015, I got invited to a small reception at the White House before the president was announcing his clean power plan. And what he told his staff was, I want a reception beforehand with about a dozen people from outside the Beltway from states that matter. Now, I'm not disillusioned. I don't think that there was any reason for President Obama to invite me to the White House. He wasn't even inviting Fresh Energy to the White House, but he was very clearly inviting Minnesota to the White House. And the White House photographer captured some interesting gentlemen in this image. The gentleman just to my right is Harold Wimmer. He's the president of the American Lung Association. He's from another interesting state, which is Illinois. And his press release that day applauded the president and said, we need to regulate emissions from coal plants because burning coal kills people. President of the American Lung Association. And then to his right was a gentleman I hadn't yet met, but now I've come to know quite well, because he's the CEO of my power company, and probably yours too. He's the CEO of Xcel Energy. His name is Ben Folk. He provides about half the electricity in Minnesota, and also electrons in companies from the Canadian border to the Mexican border in eight states, fourth largest utility in the country. That he was in the White House to celebrate regulations on coal and climate action means that we have won. We are starting to win, and we should acknowledge that going forward. The president was interested in talking about how Minnesota had passed a bipartisan policy, was accomplishing these giant job numbers, especially in rural parts of the state, that pay family-supporting wages, and that we were doing this, we were cutting carbon with business leadership. He also wanted to see these numbers about what Minnesota has done to grow solar capacity. In Minnesota, it was a pretty darn good solar day today, right? And for those of you who are not chemists, you should know that those solar panels that were producing electricity today are more efficient at lower temperatures, something in Minnesota's favor. So this shows that because of solar policies that Fresh Energy helped implement, we've now so far grown, expanded solar generation in Minnesota 50-fold, 50 times. Good news. Here was the president's favorite graph, though. Looking at the period of time, the effects of this policy, first look at the black line, which is stable. That is electricity sales. That is good news because that means power companies have not had to add what would probably be contentious sources of generation at great expense, and who knows where they would locate them. The line is flat. The blue line is what happened to the Minnesota state economy. Many of us will remember the recession centered on 2008. And even so, we've grown the economy. That increase is about a 29% increase. Mirroring that, coincidentally, the decrease in emissions from our power sector happens to be a decrease of 29%. This is known in the power world as a decoupling. It's happening in many other states as well. This is Minnesota success, showing that you don't have to choose between the economy and addressing global warming. You can do both and be successful. So I want to give you a quick background on these COPs that we're talking about tonight. We're talking about COP24, which stands for Conference of the Party. Where in the world did that come from? Way back in 1992 in Brazil, there was the first Earth Summit. You may have heard of it, or sometimes it was called the Rio Summit. That actually is the first President Bush, who was one of over 100 presidents of nations who addressed that gathering. It's sometimes called the Development and Economic Summit. And it came out with a treaty called the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change. It's also abbreviated, you'll hear banter about it, UNFCCC. That's where that comes from. And interesting, this was the main goal of the treaty. And it was really about food and water. So the United States ratified this treaty. The Senate ratified it in 1994. The United States is still a part of this treaty. That's why the United States was part of the Poland negotiations we'll be talking about tonight. So in Poland, we're now up to everyone who's a party to the treaty meets every year, and we're now in the 24th year of this. All right, I'm going to fast forward now to COP21. This was one of four COPs that I've been to so far. So I've been in Montreal, Paris, Bonn, and now Katowice, Poland. Paris, of course, was the birthplace of the Paris Climate Agreement. That's what that 1.5 degrees Celsius means on the Eiffel Tower. This was a big win. This was the first time the world's nations, 197 of them, agreed to an ambitious goal to try to keep future warming to 1.5 degrees C. For reference, that's about 2.7 degrees Fahrenheit. And we've already had a little over 1 degree C warming so far. So there was great cause for celebration. My own understanding of what was going on in Paris was this was the first year, 2015, that the world's nations met and something was true about the economy. In particular, in most parts of the world, there were cost-effective substitutes for fossil fuels in electricity. That drew Bill Gates and a whole cadre of billionaires interested in loaning money, starting big projects in Africa and other places, making money around this. But it also drew, I have to just point out this Minnesota presence at in Paris. Very important. General Mills was the only party in Paris to bring six American farmers to a climate negotiation. 50,000 other people there, nobody thought or had the means to bring six American farmers. General Mills did not script the farmers, but the farmers got up one after another. They came from different states, they grew different crops, and they all said that they were worried about a future with global warming and whether there would be sufficient moisture when it was time to harvest their crops. And so the policy of General Mills is now down through their global value chain. Imagine that. Every supplier has to achieve 25% reductions in greenhouse gases by 2025. Is that powerful? Yes. Are you proud that a Minnesota company started that? It was a really important piece of action mirrored by other companies that made Paris successful. So, 2 years after Paris, 2017, we have a new president. Famous Rose Garden speech. It was a very hot day. Announced that he would take us out of the Paris Climate Agreement. So we were about to go into the next international climate negotiation a few months later. Here was the situation in June of that year. The countries in Russet don't want to be part, have announced that they don't want to be part of the Paris Agreement. But by the November of that year, a few months after this, first Nicaragua and then Syria had decided that, yes, again, they wanted to be part of the Paris Agreement. So this map is a little, I'm a geographer, so I know this map is a little distorted in size, but you can see that there's clearly an outlier. So the question became, at an international climate summit, what was needed from the U.S. presence? A group of investors and philanthropists decided that if President Trump wasn't going to have a presence at the Bonn Climate Summit in 2017, that they would set up their own U.S. Climate Action Center. And we were fortunate at Fresh Energy. We got a call about a month before the conference that said, Jay, would you like to set up a panel of Minnesotans to talk about deep carbon reduction in your state? And then we were given the option of doing the same thing for the Midwest. I very quickly said, yes, we would do this. And I have to say, pretty quickly, I jettisoned the Midwest because I knew that there were a lot of stories in Minnesota. So this is the name of the panel we did for the global audience. We only had an hour. Deep carbon reduction, Minnesota leadership in the heartland. All of those words are important. And here is the panel I was able to assemble. I started with Target. Because Target has a little known goal about climate change, which is that they want all of their 1,800 US stores, all of their stores, to run on 100% renewable energy as quickly as possible. 500 of those stores will have solar panels by 2020. One of them in Minnesota, my own Target store on University Avenue, has them now. You should make sure that you get them on your Target store. And that they also are interested in greenhouse gas reductions throughout their value chain. So that was the leadership position. We also had someone from Governor Dayton's office, Melissa Hortman, who now has gotten a raise and a promotion thanks to the election. I brought my husband, Patrick Hamilton, from the Science Museum, not because he's my husband, but because he has engineered With the help of Target Corporation and Xcel Energy and Ecolab, a commitment at the Science Museum that has reduced the heating needs of the Science Museum 75% with a 3-year payback period. So I'm saying that to you, and my husband's here tonight. Anyone who knows of a building in Minnesota that's done better than that, we will bring you to the next climate conference as well to tell that story. All right. So that was 2017. And again, it was a workaround the Trump administration because although they were present, they had very little presence, and they did not have the capability to actually greet the rest of the world. And what was needed was to show the rest of the world that the United States is still in on climate action. So this past year, about a month and a half ago, a number of us who are in the room were in Katowice, Poland. There it is on the map, quite near Krakow. And for the next, the 2018 meeting of parties. This time, Poland. So if you don't know, Poland has more coal miners than Germany, specifically 90,000 of them in this region we were in. So we passed by very large coal plants. It was evident in the air that a lot of coal was being burned. And it was evident in the pavilions of the COP that they were showcasing coal. Here, this lovely lady is walking on coal. You can't quite tell, but this is actually coal jewelry over here, which is not something that I find very fetching. But there were, you know, there was a lot of controversy, especially from young activists who were at the COP. They were concerned about whether coal was, they knew that coal was paying for a lot of this convention of 23,000 people, and they were very concerned about that. But it was interesting to look at the polls of Polish people. And consistently over the last few years, 69 to 75% of the Polish people have said they want their country, which is, gets 80% of their power from coal, 80%, to exit coal. This is very important this term because the UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change in November of last year said it's very important to meet our 1.5 degree Celsius goal. We will need as a globe to exit coal by the 2040s. So that's very important. So in Poland, I worked with an organization that's known as We Are Still In. A number of entities in this room are part of We Are Still In, the Science Museum of Minnesota. St. Ben's and St. John's are part of We Are Still In. The government of Minnesota is part of We Are Still In. The aquarium in Duluth is part of We Are Still In, the American Swedish Institute. I first heard about them when they placed an ad in the Wall Street Journal after the 2016 federal election, about 5 days after. And they announced, it was signed by General Mills and a number of other companies, saying, we want the United States to still be in the Paris Agreement because we see the opportunity to improve the lives of people around the world and make money in investments in clean energy. So they also had a presence in San Francisco last summer. This is the declaration that they've made going forward, just so you know. And they have three objectives. And this was important to us when a number of us were in Bonn, Germany at the climate conference when the Trump administration was pretty much absent. But everyone wanted to know what is happening at the sub-national level. They wanted to know that there were some efforts going on in the United States commensurate with the Paris Agreement. So building that confidence was important to tell stories. And also, this is a coalition, 3,600 businesses and investors especially, interested in building up the ability of the United States to meet its Paris Agreement goals and to broaden the US sub-national obligations. And action. Now, it's often a lot is made of local action, but to be honest, I know we're in a very important city, Minneapolis, my hometown of St. Paul, also very interested in climate action, but most of the climate levers are pulled at the state level, especially on energy. So the good news is they are not pulled by Washington, D.C. The decisions are made in St. Paul. So we went to this Polish summit, and we were looking, and a lot of people in the world were interested in In Paris, the framers of the climate agreement said, by the end of the summit at 2018 in Poland, there needed to be an operations rulebook, an operating guide that was very detailed, how countries showed what emissions reductions they had achieved, and also what climate finance they had provided. And that needed to be transparent. And also, there needed to be a mechanism in UN speak to ratchet up ambition. That what was agreed to in Paris was by no means, in no way, what was needed to address climate change. And so every country had to do much more. And to provide finance, the promise out of Paris was that the developing nations would assemble by 2020 $100 billion in green funding to help deploy renewable energy and energy efficiency in developing countries who can't afford it. So when we got to Poland in week one, there was the only official U.S. event. And here are the people at that event. Seems like a lot of men. And to counter that, tonight we're only having women speak. So so we noticed that right away. And it wasn't until they introduced the gentleman in the center there that we heard his accent and learned that he was actually a coal magnate who is Australian. So it was kind of funny to have him on the U.S. panel of what we're going to do. So young people and people from developing nations had cooked up a plan that they were dispersed around the room listening to this panel, and they had a signal, and they jumped up and started protesting. And they protested for about 15 minutes. And their protests were about keeping it in the ground, were about native rights, were about climate justice, and they wanted better representation from the United States. They were, after about 15 minutes, they were sent out of the room, and the panel continued. And there were still plenty of people in the room to listen to this. And then later on, the U.S. delegation teamed up with these folks and tried very hard the first week of the two-week conference to not accept the UN report that said how much more we needed to do. They were unsuccessful in that, but that took up a lot of time at the conference. Fresh Energy doesn't go to a conference like this without lots of friends, because you need people who can connect you to other people. You need to be part of a larger mass. We work through the International Climate Action Network, or CAN, 1,300 NGOs from over 120 countries around the country. We have twice daily meetings during the COPs, and we are sharing intelligence about what nations are doing and what we should do about this. An important thing we do at 4:30 or 6 every evening is have a press conference. And the press conference is to release the fossil of the day, the award for fossil of the day. And this is the entity at the COP who has done its best to do its worst in stopping climate action and the negotiations from moving forward. And we also have, when a country or an entity has done something good, we have another award that's called the Ray of the Day, the Shining Ray. Believe it or not, these press conferences are covered by every international camera on the scene. Example, a couple of years ago, people from the Netherlands, nonprofits in the Netherlands, said to the group of 120 NGOs, I know you think, we know that you think that the Netherlands is doing very well on wind, but we're very disoriented to see all of these posters about Dutch wind development around this conference when we know that the Netherlands hasn't increased its renewable energy laws in 10 years. We said, yes, that's not our impression. And so what can we do? Well, let's call that out at the press conference. We gave the Netherlands a fossil of the day. That evening, on every local TV channel in the Netherlands was feed from that press conference. And within 1 week, there was new legislation passed in the Netherlands to improve renewable energy. So in the United Nations setup, naming and shaming is a real thing. Doesn't work with every country, but it's a way to call out what is not acceptable to the rest of the world. So We wouldn't be going back again and again to these conferences of the parties at Fresh Energy unless we had some access. We're not just there as tourists, we're not taking selfies. But here's an example of access we had in Paris. I'm way in the back there trying hard to listen to Secretary Kerry, who had asked for a group of 10 people from the US to meet with him while he was within 2 days of helping move forward the Paris Agreement. So we got firsthand knowledge. We were told that we couldn't bring cameras into the event. So imagine my surprise when the following weekend a friend of mine called me up and said, Jay, did you know you're on today with George Stephanopoulos? I said, I'm surely am not. But anyway, footage from that meeting was shown on ABC TV that day. And it was really great to be able to sit down. We had about 45 minutes with the secretary to talk about what was happening and weigh in with him. Same thing when we were asked in Bonn, we were able to bring Target in front of the global audience in order to say what wonderful things they are doing and how they are also helping back home here in Minnesota lead our community here of businesses. And then this year, here's my husband. I don't know if you recognize this gentleman. He is the Prime Minister of Fiji. He was the president of the Bonn COP. His name is Frank Bainimarama. And he told the group in Poland, told the delegates in Poland, we low-lying nations, remember he's from Fiji, we expect you to quintuple your obligations and your commitments under the Paris Agreement. And we had that access. We had about 3 hours with Frank, as he likes to be called, to talk about what was happening at a dinner because of relationships we've established with this organization, the Business Council for Sustainable Energy. So they know Minnesota's position. We are trusted partners with them, and we get that kind of access, which is wonderful. So, again in Poland, we are still in coalition, this 3,600 business and other organizations. They assembled a panel discussion. Here are the players on that. Businesses, nonprofits, faith leaders. And that got picked up by a number of organizations, including ABC News, CBS News, Fox Business. I found out when my sister in the Hudson River Valley of New York emailed me in Poland and said, I opened my paper today and there is my brother-in-law in the newspaper from Poland. And I said, well, you know, tell me what wire service that was, because we know it's in a lot of other places as well. So trying to tell those Minnesota stories, and then my husband Patrick is there in the middle. And he subsequently, in the next few days, was part of bilateral meetings with emissaries from Germany, from France, and from low-lying island nations. So we have that kind of access as well. So how do we tell how we're doing in this going forward? Again, these are the things that we are looking for. Most people I know would give the COP about a C minus. So the good news is it came through with an operational, it's about 135-page Paris rulebook so that things can move forward together. I like to say that it was really clear that countries were reaffirming the Paris Agreement commitment. Notably, the United States, after that little strange event with the Australian coal representative, didn't have any other events. Kept their State Department set of 25 to 27 career diplomats to negotiate. And actually, they were very useful, apparently, in negotiating Brazil down from a position that essentially would say that they could double count what they're doing on energy, including more decimation of the Amazon rainforest. That was not allowed. And American action was actually very important there. So that was great to get that reaffirmation, but still it was very clear, everyone talking about the need to ramp up quickly to avoid catastrophic change. And we like to see Minnesota positioned as a climate action leader. So here are the ways that I think Minnesota has been a leader. I've talked some about the growth in renewable energy, corporate policy. I've used the example of General Mills and of Target. We're gonna hear some more about that later this evening. And then nation-leading decarbonization of electricity. So remember this gentleman. This is Ben Fogg, the CEO of Xcel. Here's what he said 5 years ago, just about today. It was an event at the Minnesota History Center. I had never heard a coal executive. Remember, he owns coal-burning power plants. He owns them. Saying this. He was saying it to a group of 250 companies. It was in a public setting, but there were no media there. I'm in a lot of energy meetings where there's no media covering it. So I was texting someone back in the office to make me this slide because I didn't think he would ever say it again, and I wanted to be able to share it with you. Ben Falk has said it many times since, including to his shareholder. He is no shrinking violet. He is very clear that renewable energy is his way forward, his company's way forward. That's his business message going forward. If you doubt me, you can find on the internet the fact that part of his corporate compensation comes from carbon reduction, is tied to carbon reduction. So he's very serious about this. And he's being helped by the marketplace. For the last 7 or so years in Minnesota, wind has been cheaper than the fossil fuel natural gas. For the last 2.5 years, wind has been cheaper than just buying the coal for Xcel Energy's cheapest coal plant. This is a very disruptive statement. I'm going to refer back to Target again. Of course, Target and other companies know this is true, and they want access to that very cheap, very clean energy, which their customers want them to buy too. So what Xcel has done is gone from a business decision in 2015. Fresh Energy helped them along a little bit on this. You can ask me a question about that if you'd like. It wasn't their original decision. But they came to the realization that 60% carbon cuts by 2030 was the cheapest thing they could do for their customers. Who here is an Xcel Energy customer? The cheapest thing they could do. This is great. In November of 2017, they announced, Ben Falk was in a small room, smaller than this one, no media. He just said to regulators, we're going to meet that vision by 2022, 8 years early. I happened to be on Twitter at the time, and I was tweeting that out so that people could know, because it's a very big goal to meet early. And I almost missed when he flipped to his next PowerPoint slide, because unlike most CEOs, he didn't just rest on his laurels. He said, 1 minute after he made this announcement, he said, so now we need a new vision for 2030. Here's his new vision. So if you get power from this company, did you know your power is going to 85% carbon free by 2030? Did you know that? And guess what? It's now going to 100% carbon free across the 8 states he works in and sells power in by 2050. The first utility in the United States to make this effort. So when we go back to this legislation and look at that second part, which is deep carbon reductions, we know we need not just Xcel Energy, but everyone who sells electricity in the state to accomplish the same things. We're now in a new legislative session. And now there are going to be bills introduced, probably tomorrow, that will raise that renewable energy standard from 25% by 2025 to 80% by 2035. And we'll set a carbon-free standard, not just for Xcel, but did you know there are 176 utilities in Minnesota? To level the playing field for all of them. So I'd love to talk to you after the meeting. Outside, I have a table about how you can contact the people who represent you in the legislature to see if they will support that. If you like this approach from Fresh Energy, we really hope you'll become a member. Some of you are here tonight. This is one of my colleagues, young son Sam, rocking the Fresh Energy onesie. But the reason we do this is for kids growing up today. And I like to remind people, climate change is really not about looking 7 generations ahead. You can look in the eyes today when you go home at the people who are going to be very, very affected by global warming, and we need to do right by them. I hope you'll stay connected with us. I'm on Twitter, I'm on Facebook, I'm on LinkedIn. We'd love to have you going forward. And what's going to happen next is in a few minutes, we're going to bring up chairs and some panelists. So be preparing your questions. You will hear from a variety of panelists who are also in Poland. But first, I'm going to bring up, because she has a few slides, let me introduce one of our panelists. Dr. Gail Schuler is here with us. She'll come up in a minute. She is 3M's Vice President of Sustainability and Product Stewardship and their Chief Sustainability Officer. Gail started in 3M's corporate laboratory, as a product development engineer and has over 20 years of technical and business leadership experience. Her career spans a broad range of businesses from electronics, healthcare, consumer industries. She has led technical and business teams from around the world, including Europe, Asia, Latin America, and North America, and she was in Poland for COP24. She is passionate about making a positive impact in the world, as you'll see, and has a great announcement to repeat for you that was first made at the Poland COP. Please join us, Gail.